Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. I'm glad y'all made it here safely. We have one case on our oral argument docket this afternoon, and then we have other cases that will be submitted today without oral argument. As a reminder to the lawyers, since this is an expunction case and oral arguments in our court are recorded and posted to our website, if you could please refer to the appellant as appellant or by initials, that would be greatly appreciated. With that, our clerk will call the case.
The court will now call the state of Texas government in R.
Mr. Orbison.
May it please the court and counsel. The appellant in this case is the state, so I'll refer to the appellee as NRJ.
There we go.
And I always hate to begin oral arguments with correcting my brief, but here we go. Sorry. Page one, I just totally confuse everybody by saying that the arrest happened on December 2012. It happened in 2007. It is correct that the petitioner said 2012 in his petition, but that was no reason for me to repeat that mistake. I'm sorry. The other mistake, and again, I apologize, it occurs on page 5 of the state's brief, amended brief, where I say that this issue has not yet been addressed by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. Probably never will, because this is a civil case and it would be addressed, if at all, by the Supreme Court of Texas. And so forgive me those two errors. I'll try, and they always seem to creep in, even though I try not to have them. What we're here today for, the issue in this case, is how does the expunction law, has it affected when a defendant takes advantage of a proceeding prescribed under 12.45 of the Penal Code. In other words, where a defendant admits he was guilty of an offense and subject to the, in accordance with the state's agreement, admits guilt and asks for the court to consider that offense in punishment for another offense. And the state agrees that, of course, he will never be prosecuted for that unadjudicated offense to which he admitted guilt.
So you're talking about a plea and bar.
Plea and bar. That's what, that how that relates to the expunction statute is the overarching issue that we have before us. Now, for many years, everybody kind of went by the JSH case, which was out of the Austin Court of Appeals, and it was decided, I believe, in the year 2001. Counsel can correct me if that's wrong, but I believe that's correct. And although county attorneys and district attorneys and the Department of Public Safety didn't like the case, they kind of were forced to abide by it. And so that was the state of the art as to 1245 offenses and whether they could be expunged at that time. A decade later, the same court, the Austin Court of Appeals, had a case that it decided that was MM, in which it decided not to follow much of the earlier JSH opinion and instead hold that you could not expunge a case that had proceeded under 1245 of the Penal Code as a plea and bar. So those were the two primary cases at the time the hearing in this case happened. In Denton County, once MM came out, of course, the Department of Public Safety and district attorney's offices and county attorney's offices started saying, no, we don't agree to an expunction of this case because you proceeded with the plea and bar under 1245. You admitted guilt. You admitted that the arrest was not wrongful. Therefore, you don't get an expunction. Under MM, they began adopting that position because they finally had case law that supported it. In Denton County, as it may have happened in other counties, but we had a situation that arose of disparate treatment of petitioners. Every district court in Denton County, except for the 158th, which is the one we're here on today, followed the MM case and said no expunction when you pursued a plea and bar under 1245. But the 158th was the one exception, and so In Denton County, we felt like we had to appeal because of the disparate treatment that is being handed out in our county as to these type of cases. So that kind of gets us to where we are today. When I wrote the brief, and when the hearing was held, and then when I later wrote the brief, we pretty much had JSH and NMM, and one other case, MRL, that basically followed MM. So the current trend was toward not allowing expunctions when a case had been involved in a 1245 plea and bar. Since I wrote the brief, three cases have come down in October, and I have supplied those to the court, and I've also supplied them to opposing attorney, which very fortuitous for the state's position in this case, because they all, for various reasons, say that you really can't expunge an unadjudicated offense to which you admitted guilt through the 1245 process. And I really want to look at, you have MR briefed in the brief that I submitted to the court, and you have MRL briefed. Not too much of a mention in JSH, although I do drop a footnote about that case, because the Austin court has clearly gone a different direction when it decided MM. So let's look at these cases real quickly, and of course, anytime the court has a question, I'm very happy to address it. What's interesting about the first case, which is DPS versus Dickin, and it was handed, all these cases came down this month, okay, since the brief has been filed. The interesting thing about Dickin, and I was very happy to see it, is because it followed MM as the state is asking this court to do, and it did so using the current version of the expunction statute. And that's, of course, just like a very nice serendipitous thing to happen to the state in this case, because opposing counsel argued that all the MM case, the MRL case, didn't apply. Excuse me. Because they were decided under the pre-2011 amendments to the expunction statute. Now, intellectually, I reasoned that didn't matter. But it's always nice to have case support for that. And so that's what we've got with DPS versus Dickin. Using the current version of the expunction statute, the court held that the petitioner was not entitled to an expunction when he took advantage of the 1245 plea and bar process that the state agreed to. Real quickly, in Dickin, he was arrested for two offenses: felony possession of controlled substance and misdemeanor DWI. He pled no contest to the DWI, received community supervision. The felony possession of controlled substance was taken into consideration under 1245 as part of the plea agreement. In June of 2012, after the change in the law, petitioner wanted to expunge the possession of controlled substance, and the trial court granted that, and the appeal resulted. Very sorry.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though, but I'm looking at the Dickin case that you were mentioning, and it looks like that they're quoting the old version of the statute.
They're actually quoting the new version, Your Honor.
Well, wasn't there a change in 55.01A from relating to the arrest expunged to relating to the offense expunged?
There were several changes. I think the one you might be talking about is the one they do quote.
On page two of the opinion that you gave us, and it looks like it says at the bottom of the page on the right-hand column, the relevant portion of Article 5501 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure provides, and then it sets out to quote A, and at least that is not, that says files relating to the arrest expunged, and I thought that the change was files relating to the offense expunged.
I'm not sure I'm with you. Oh, no, no, no. That part did not change. What changed is in part two. If you look at part two, right underneath that one, I don't think that one changed. Let me make sure.
It quoted in the Appellee's brief on page 9 of his brief, it's at least quoted that the change now says relating to the offense expunged.
Well, yes, but that's under down below under 2. If you'll keep going, after what you just read, if you under 2 right there, if you read down, the change is at the very bottom where it says the offense or the offense. You're with me. it used to say any offense there. So this is the new law that it's quoting, where it says the offense rather than any offense. And if that's wrong, opposing counsel can certainly correct me, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
Speaker, I don't want to interrupt this time.
Go ahead.
There's two A's. The relevant section is A2A.
Okay.
The first A is most important, which you just recited. There, it is, the new opinion does quote the new statute. Where you're quoting from my brief is in the sub-A that's under 2, where they talk about the arrest and the offense.
Okay.
So
all right.
Violent agreement. But
okay. Thank you.
It's okay. This is the new statute, which is the point. And the court held that the various reasons for holding that the petitioner in that the trial court erred and the petitioner wasn't entitled to an expunction was that the statute, the expunction statute, does not address or make allowances for expunction of individual offenses stemming from an arrest. So that's one reason. In a case where a person is arrested for multiple offenses, can that person get an expunction for one of those offenses, even though the person admits that the arrest was not wrongful, and even though the person admits is convicted for one of those offenses?
Yeah, but when y'all use those arrests for punishment, y'all always count them as separate arrests. And you were arrested 5 times in one day when you were arrested for DWI, and then they found meth in your car, and you got arrested for the meth, and then they found that you were driving with your license suspended, and you got arrested for DWLS. I mean, y'all treat those as separate arrests, and if, let's say you arrest somebody for DWI, you're doing an inventory search, you find meth in the car, y'all got to get a warrant for a new arrest for the meth. Y'all can't just up the bond and throw in the meth. I mean, you've got each one of those is a separate arrest.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, and from one perspective, they are separate arrests because there are separate offenses involved.
Right.
But it's all one criminal transaction.
Ah, but it doesn't talk about transaction.
Well, they do in one case, and I will get to that.
But the statute. What about looking at the purpose of the plea and bar?
Yes. Go ahead.
The purpose of the plea and bar, as I remember from long, long ago, is that rather than do the paperwork and go to the trouble of a conviction for each one of these things and then run them concurrently, just say, okay, I'm going to punish you for this one, but I'm really punishing you for this one and this one and this one and this one. And the cases that are pled in bar are never dismissed because you were punished for them when they were all rolled into one in that one offense that was the big one.
And that all rolling in is essentially what the Dickin case is saying. Saying all those things are wrapped together with a 1245 plea and bar. So you can't get an expunction from it because it did result in a final conviction.
It was never dismissed.
That's what MM says, and I
right.
totally agree with that. It was never dismissed.
Because you can't dismiss it if you're considering it for punishment.
Exactly. It's all wrapped in. It's an integral part of the conviction for the adjudicated offense. I agree with that.
And what would happen if somebody through a writ and contested the case that was pled in bar, would there have to be a new punishment hearing?
I think there would be. I mean, you're just asking my opinion. I understand that. Off the top of my head, I think there would be, because
we just offer opinions too, so that's okay.
Because we considered that offense in the punishment for the adjudicated offense. And now, if that offense goes away for some reason, then I think we have to have a new punishment hearing for the adjudicated offense, because it's different now.
Because the defendant would be punished for less, and
Theoretically,
because, I mean, you're not now considering the offense that was pled in bar. So, theoretically, that defendant's entitled to a hearing on less criminal activity and the possibility of a lower sentence.
If he wins his writ.
Of course,
I would be arguing that that writ shouldn't be successful. But
well, then that really messes up your position here, doesn't it?
I don't think so, but if it does, I'll retract it. I don't think it does. Getting back to, are we having light problems?
No.
I'm not red yet,
but yellow is. We took your time.
Gone. Okay.
A couple minutes. 2 minutes, please.
So under Dickin, under the current statute, Dickin follows M.M. It says, look, you can't expunge it because he admitted he was guilty. He admitted the arrest was not wrongful. You can't expunge it.
I'm just now looking at Dickin, but it looks to me like the pivotal part of the opinion is that where the appellate court says that although the record suggests that the charge was dismissed, the record does not contain a court-ordered dismissal on the felony possession charge.
I agree. It says that. I don't think it's the pivotal part, but it does say that.
So it looks like if there was a dismissal, the outcome could be different.
I don't think so, because this is under the new statute.
Correct.
The new statute takes out that dismissal language, although it keeps in the language currently pending. But it takes out the dismissal language, which might, I would argue at least, means that the dismissal part of that case and the MM case is not pivotal. I agree with it, but it's not a pivotal part under the new statute, in my opinion. The next case is ORT, another 1245 case, but this one is interesting because this one was a single offense. This was not a multiple offense arrest that we typically find in these 1245 cases. Here there was an arrest for a single offense, driving while license suspended. And he uses that, he agrees to a 1245 plea and bar, and the state agrees, and uses that in the adjudication of a separate offense for involving a separate arrest for, I think it was a DWI offense that time. So this case is interesting because it's not a multiple arrest situation, and yet the finding is still the same. It follows MM to a lesser extent MRL. Another interesting thing about the ORT case, this one's out of El Paso, is this case just kind of honestly acknowledges that it was the Austin Court of Appeals in two cases, JSH and MM, that have really set the bar for this area of law. And it looks carefully at the JSH case in terms of the dissent. It says the dissent really got it right there, not the two-justice majority in JSH that was decided back in 2001. For time purposes, I'm going to go on and just briefly mention the next case, which was the Helm case. And actually, not too much to note here, except for all these cases are in agreement that when a defendant admits guilt under a 1245 procedure and admits he was not wrongfully arrested, there can be no expunction because the primary purpose of the expunction statute, as stated by the Supreme Court of Texas, is that it allows for expunctions of offenses related to wrongful arrests. And so all three of those cases, including MM, including MRL, all are in agreement on that principle, that the overriding purpose of the expunction statute is to take care of wrongful arrests, not arrests that were not wrongful. Here, in this case that we're arguing today, there was nothing wrongful about his arrest for marijuana, and in fact, he admitted he possessed marijuana. See, the time is up. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Counsel, good afternoon, and may it please the court. Your Honors, to the extent that the opposing counsel's arguments were properly preserved, and I realize I waived an argument in my brief, it's our position in this case that all of them, including the reliance on the Dickin case, are all premised on the older version of the statute that no longer exists. So in my brief time before the court today, I'd like to address why the legislature's 2011 amendments to Article 5501 require an affirmance, to demonstrate why all of the authorities that the state's counsel cited were simply an opposite to this dispute, and finally, to distinguish the Dickin case and show why its reasoning was, with respect to the court down I-35, poorly decided and should not be followed. Now, as I noted in my brief and a rather extensive discussion of the legislative history, the legislature specifically changed the wording of Article 5501 in 2011 because, and I quote, "current law and court decisions have made it increasingly difficult for a person who has certain criminal charges that have been dismissed to receive an expunction." And as discussed in all of the cases, save Dickin, that opposing counsel just mentioned, the former subsection A2 required numerous things. A dismissal or quash of the charging instrument or a total lack of probable cause, and it prohibited an expunction if any offense, and this is what we were discussing earlier, Justice Walker, if any offense resulted in a final conviction or community supervision. The current version of the statute completely recodified 5501A. Instead, my client has to show four things to be entitled to an expunction. One, that he has been released, that is not disputed. Two, there was no court-ordered community supervision for the offense, the indefinite article any offense, or the inclusive article, or pronoun any, was replaced by the definite article the offense. The offense makes no sense if you aren't talking about the offense for which you're seeking expunction. And there's no dispute in this case, nor does the state suggest that my client received community supervision for the offense for which he seeks expunction. The third requirement is that prosecution for the offense is barred by limitations, which is also undisputed here. And finally, the charge did not result in a final conviction and is no longer pending. Now, that is the only plausible element that could even be remotely said to have been disputed by the state here, but we respectfully submit that there is no way to reasonably read the requirement that no final conviction and no longer pending could apply to this case. When you look at the record and look at the way that this plea and bar was dismissed, it says, "It is therefore ordered that defendant's plea and bar is in all things sustained, that his prosecution be barred with prejudice from the state's prosecution, and that the defendant is hereby discharged." To suggest that that language could somehow be read as allowing a discharge to still be pending, respectfully, just simply doesn't accord with basic meanings of the English language. So because dismissal for lack of probable cause is no longer a requirement under Article 5501 as it used to be, and all of the discussion about how the purpose of the expunction statute was to allow expunctions only in the case of wrongful arrests, that language is no longer relevant. It's no longer included in the statute, and all of the cases prior to today that opposing counsel mentioned are simply not interpreting the current law. Now, at the conclusion of his argument, opposing counsel noted, correctly, as I might add, that the Supreme Court noted in 1991 in a case called Harris County versus JTS, just to add to the alphabet soup of cases we're already dealing with. But in JTS, the Supreme Court of Texas noted that the purpose of the expunction statute at that time was to provide a remedy in the event of a wrongful arrest. But it's important to look to the context of the actual fact pattern of JTS to look at why the Supreme Court actually said that. In JTS, the criminal defendant, pleaded guilty simply to a charge of possession of marijuana. It was a single offense arrest. He received probation for that arrest. There's no disputing that. There's never been a version of the expunction statute in which you could plead guilty to a charge and receive community supervision for it and get an expunction. But in JTS, the defendant tried to do so, because while the expunction statute had stayed the same, the legislature had recodified Article 42 of the Court of Criminal Procedure such that felony probation was now dealt with under Section 4213 and misdemeanors were 4212. And because the old expunction statute said you couldn't have received community supervision under 4213, he said, aha, I got you. I didn't get it under 4213, I got it under 4212, so therefore I'm entitled to an expunction. And the Supreme Court, basically recognizing that the defendant was trying to pull a gotcha, said, no. Look at the full language of the expunction statute. What are they really trying to do here? And they looked at the language, which still used those words, any arrest, any offense, any charge, and said, under that version of the statute, the intent of the legislature was clear. You could only get an expunction if you were not found guilty and did not admit to guilt of any charge out of a single transaction. All of the cases, specifically MM, that have followed from that point have quoted that language, and they've cited JTS as if it was interpreting the new statute. It has never interpreted the new statute, it interpreted the old one. So the only case that has been published to date that discusses the new post-2011 changes is the Dickin case. And again, with respect to the San Antonio Court of Appeals, they simply did not look at this analysis. Their opinion does not discuss the legislative history or the purpose for the changes, and it certainly doesn't go into the fact that there's a difference between the statute in the JTS case versus the one that we're dealing with right now. So in other words, what we need to look at is, why is the statute the way it is now? Why would the legislature change from any arrest, any offense, to the offense? I mean, there can be no purpose for that but to what is already explained by the legislative history, to make it easier for defendants to obtain an expunction. Now, I understand the policy interest that the state has here and how they believe that if you have admitted that you were properly arrested for something, you shouldn't be able to get the one expunged, notwithstanding the procedural vehicle by which you were ultimately adjudicated. But that's not the statute the state's working with. Basically, my argument here is that the state is turning to this court to modify what the legislature recently did for the express purpose of making it easier for my guy to get an expunction. And the cases it's relying on are cases that were specifically handled before the new modifications came. So we simply can't look to that. This is really an issue of first impression, with the only other decision that handles it is the Dickin matter. And for the reasons I just discussed, that we believe, I respectfully submit, and I'm sure my client does as well, that analysis is simply faulty, because it took the dicta from the Texas Supreme Court in 1991 about an old statute and assumed that it applied to the new one. And because the language changed, it simply cannot have. In conclusion, Your Honor, all of these cases note that expungement is not a common law privilege. It's a benefit or an opportunity created by statute. But obviously it's a benefit or it's an opportunity created by statute for the benefit of certain individuals, namely criminal defendants who have, for whatever purpose or for whatever reason, followed certain procedures and gotten to a point in their conviction where the state agrees we're going to allow certain records to be expunged. The plain language of the statute here talks about the offense and the charge. It's been changed specifically for the purpose of helping him more. The legislative history is clear on this. There's certainly no suggestion that the 2011 amendments intended in any way to make it more restrictive to get an expunction. The purpose was to expand it. So to the extent that this court is torn between following San Antonio and not creating a split in the circuits versus permitting my client to have the opportunity for this expunction, we respectfully submit that this court should err on the side of the party for whose benefit the statute was enacted in the first place. If the state decides that it's going to expend its resources to ask the Supreme Court to review this matter and adjudicate the circuit split, let the state, with its resources, make that decision. But in light of the expressed language in the legislative history, the explicit changes in the statute, and the fact that my client has literally obeyed the letter of the law, and under the letter of the law is entitled to an expunction under this statute, we respectfully submit that the trial court's decision should be affirmed, and if any other future changes, should be properly directed to the legislature or the Supreme Court by the state. Thank you, Your Honors.
I understand that under the old law, when you lived out your probation, your case was dismissed. And that's one of the reasons that they said, even though your case is dismissed, if you were placed on probation, you can't expunge that case. You know about that,
Your Honor,
old law, right?
It's my understanding that the statute has never allowed someone to receive an expungement for a charge for which you receive community supervision.
Right, I understand that, but that was because the case was dismissed after you lived out your community supervision.
Yes, and frankly, to point out another matter, one of the other authorities that's cited by all of these cases that the opposing counsel relied on are two decisions from this court. And as he noted, between the JMH case and the MM split, okay, the JMH court relied heavily on two cases from the Fort Worth Court of Appeals, specifically noting that a 1245, a plea and bar, is not a final conviction. That was the jurisprudential authority for how JMH was decided. And it was two cases from this court. One was called Hilburn versus State in 1997, and the other was Day versus State in 1990. In Hilburn, the appellant was charged with four crimes, one of which was dismissed pursuant to a plea and bar. And when it went up on appeal, this court issued a sua sponte opinion dismissing the appeal for one of the ones that was for the charge that was conviction was obtained on a plea and bar, because it noted that that's not a final conviction. And this court noted that on its own motion. Another case, Day versus State, involved it was a challenge to whether the state got too many peremptories. And the state moved to strike a juror who had admitted to felony conduct that was dismissed via a plea and bar. And during the trial, the state said, hey, he's a convicted felon, he can't serve on a jury. And the defense argued successfully on appeal that that was an improper strike amounting to an extra peremptory because a plea and bar is not a final conviction. So that's the authority that JMH is based on. And, you know, the MM case was simply narrowing the scope of the expungement statute, taking the arrest-based approach, looking solely to the dicta from the Texas Supreme Court in the JTS case, and in the fact that the statute at that time used the word any repeatedly. Once again, I don't mean to beat a dead horse or repeat myself too much. All those anys are gone. It is now the offense and the charge. And it is simply undisputed in this case that my client did not receive community supervision for the charge for which he is seeking expunction, nor is that charge still pending, or could it ever possibly be pending, as it has been dismissed with prejudice. Thank you, Your Honors.
Just briefly, Your Honors, I would first say that I don't believe when the Supreme Court said the primary purpose of the expunction statute is to take care of a wrongful arrest, that's just dicta. I think that's a pretty important statement about the primary overarching purpose of the expunction statute, not dicta.
But that's based on the prior version of the statute.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's still used in Dickin under the new statute, that the primary purpose is to take care of wrongful arrest. Nowhere in the 2011, by the way, it's been amended several times since JTS, and in cases, each case, they re-quote that language. That is the purpose of the expunction statute as pronounced by the Supreme Court of Texas.
But wouldn't you agree that our duty in construing a statute is to give it the legislative intent? And if the
Absolutely.
Legislature has expressed a different intent.
But it hasn't, Your Honor. Nowhere in the 2011 amendments does it even hint that the primary purpose of the expunction statute is not to take care of wrongful arrest. Nowhere does it say that.
What about the procedural posture of this case? Because normally when there's a plea and bar, you don't dismiss the case that was pled and bar.
Right.
But in this case, the judge specifically dismissed the case with prejudice. So you've got a dismissal there, and even though the judge said, I'm taking it into consideration, it was dismissed.
Well, you have a later judge who is looking at the expunction issue is saying it was dismissed. You don't have a judge at the time of the plea and bar saying that the unadjudicated defense was dismissed. You have a later judge saying, well, I'm going to grant this expunction, and I find that this case was dismissed because of the 1245 plea and bar.
And y'all objected?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's in the record. And we said, Your Honor, this is not a dismissal. Read MM, it's not a dismissal. And yet the court found that. So I'm not real sure how to answer your question other than I don't believe a case is dismissed by the 1245 procedure. Coincidentally, and I guess this is what Austin was kind of hung up on for a number of years, I don't believe it's a final conviction either. Although there's some pretty good, it's tempting to say that it is, in a sense, in an expunction sense, maybe, a final conviction because it was used, the court considered it in punishment for an adjudicated offense, a convicted offense, and it was all wrapped up in that convicted, in that offense at
yeah,
that time.
Yeah, but you can't use it to enhance.
Right, right.
So.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, I don't have a big problem with saying that it's not a conviction. We're saying it's not a dismissal. It's kind of a weird thing is what it is, I guess, although maybe not everybody would agree. Anyway, so to get, I just wanted to say a couple of things that opposing counsel brought up. And I agree, you know, his treatment of the JTS case was spot on. Those were the facts, no problem. I just have a disagreement with saying it's dicta. I don't think it was. And I also have a disagreement with saying it applied only to the law that existed at that time because I don't think it does. In fact, in October of 2013, this month, the ORT court said, concluded, it would be absurd to require all references to an unadjudicated charge be expunged when the defendant admitted guilt to the charge and wrapped it into another adjudicated offense. So it's not dicta. It's not didn't apply just in 1991. It applies in 2013 under the new statute. So if there are no other questions, the state would pray that you would reverse the trial court and hold that this is not an offense that can be expunged under the expungement statute. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you for making the trip down from Denton. We appreciate your arguments and your briefs. They've been very helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and we will be adjourned.
All rise.